everyone. This is Steve Donahue with another episode of Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's show is going to be on investment risks, the various risks that are out there. In an earlier episode, a few episodes ago, I talked about the myths that are associated with finances, and one of those was that there are risk-free investments. And today we're going to, of course, look a little bit more in depth into that myth and show that there is no risk-free investment. It's just what kind of risk is it that that investment has. And we're going to look a little bit more into that, some details of that, and use some examples from various asset classes. And I want to give a preface before saying this, and that is that even though I do have an investment advisory license and insurance license and some other things, I am not giving any recommendations. I am not advocating any asset class. I am not advising you on how you should invest your money. If you want that kind of advice, then you need to talk to me personally, and we need to look at sit down and look at your what you have, what your goals are, how long you're going to be investing, those kinds of things. And so that's my disclaimer, and hopefully that will be able to prevent the regulators from causing me problems. Anyway, let's take care of some of the introductory items to begin with. First of all, make sure you're checking us out on the website and following us on the various social medias on Facebook and Twitter. And also, please give me feedback, if you will. You can do that on the left column under the Contact Me. You can give me feedback at steve@legacypodcast.com or under the show notes or iTunes. Any of those ways would be great. And then consider supporting the show by letting other people know about us, continuing to share the word and tell your friends and family to listen in. And then if you really like the show and want to support it, I ask that you become or consider becoming a legacy partner. By doing that, you help support the show at 25 cents an episode. It also gives you access to the exclusive members, premium members only page, which has over $50 worth of value, including a couple of gardening items, as well as a debt-free program on there that helps you eliminate your debt using the debt snowball. And then, of course, again, you can help support the show at less than 25 cents an episode. And that, I'm going to cut it short. That takes care of the introductory segment for today. So let's go ahead and talk about the various kinds of investment risk that is out there. And I want to just identify some of them and then go back through and talk about more specifically what they are and what they're characterized by. So first of all, there is systematic or market risk. Secondly, there's inflationary risk. Thirdly, there is credit or business risk. And fourth, there is regulatory risk. And then fifth, there is interest rate risk. So first of all, then, systematic or market risk. This is what most people think about when they think about investment risk, because they hear every day on the news, the S&P went up and down, or the Dow Jones Industrial Average went up or went down, and they look at the S&P 500 chart, or they look at the Dow Jones Industrial chart, or they look at the average composite chart or something like that, and they see all these things, and they see the ups and downs of the market, and they say, well, the market is risky because it goes up and down. And indeed, that is what is referred to as market risk. The market does make stocks go up and down. And of course, the market has stocks as its means of exchange. And so market risk is the risk of investing your money in a market, in the market economy that goes up and down. So we have cycles, and despite what the Keynesians would think, the cycles have gotten worse with the Federal Reserve System. That's a whole other matter, but certainly, we continue to have cycles, ups and down cycles in the market that makes for the price of the market to be volatile. And of course, this can be remedied to some extent using various principles and financial principles of investing, but it's still there. And so the market is at risk, and your money is at risk when it's put into a market. This is why there's obviously no guarantees. You can lose money, And anybody who doubts that, of course, can just look at 2008 when the average market went down over 30%, sometimes even within 1 month, 50%, and, you know, a huge decline in the market. And then, you know, sharp inclines after that. So the ups and downs in the market is what is referred to as market risk. And then there is inflationary risk. This here is referred to as the risk that is associated with the devaluing of our dollar. Now, let me explain, first of all, a little bit about inflation and how that is related to the devaluing of our dollar. A lot of people think that inflation is actually the increase of prices as a result of higher demand or something like that. And to some extent, that is the case, but the higher demand is a result of more purchasing power or more money that is available. And so inflation is actually a devaluing of the money supply because of higher printing or, you know, more money being printed or something like that. And so if you look throughout our history since 1913, when the Federal Reserve came into being, we have lost 97% of the value of our dollar. And so what used to cost $3 in 1913 now costs $100. And that is not because greedy business people decided to hike their prices. It's not because corporations decide to hike their prices, getting together with other corporations and causing some kind of, bidding war or something like that. No, what it is it's a result of the printing press. It's a result of the devaluing of the dollar. Now, this is nothing new. Of course, this has happened for time and millenniums, where kings and those who were in authority continue to shave the coins around the edges so that the whole amount of coin was not actually given away. And the same thing is happening today, of course, only on a grander scale and with much more recklessness when they are able to print pretty freely from the coffers of the Federal Treasury and the federal banks. And so inflationary risk is the risk that your money will not be the same value as it will be in the future, the same purchasing power. So our dollar today will not be worth a dollar in 10 years from now. It will be worth less than that because of inflationary pressure. And so that's the risk associated with inflation. Thirdly is credit or business risk. This is the risk that the company in which you are investing goes bankrupt, loses its value, loses its credit entirely. And of course, in our culture today, it seems as though there are few companies that are truly going bankrupt and losing everything and leaving their stockholders at a loss, because our federal government once again comes to the rescue, so to speak, and bails out those companies that are too big to fail. But it used to be that when companies made bad choices, they could fail and they could go into bankruptcy. And when they went into bankruptcy, of course, it made all of their stocks pretty much worthless. And if you had purchased those stocks and then that company goes bankrupt, you lose almost everything. And so that is the concept of credit or business risk. Regulatory risk is pretty much what you might think with the word regulatory risk. It is the idea that the government will change its regulatory requirements, change its laws associated with a various industry or a various company, and make it either more difficult or less difficult for that company to prosper under the new regulations. Of course, a perfect example of this would be the healthcare reforms that are being advocated by the Obama administrations and others that would indicate that there is a greater burden now placed upon companies that have to meet certain regulatory requirements when it comes to providing health care for their employees. And this, obviously, even as I speak, has probably caused some uncertainty into the government as they look at, or some uncertainty regarding what the government is going to do in the private sector as they look at or anticipate what might be down the pike for them. And so, this this is an example or this is a description of regulatory risk. The last one I want to talk about is interest rate risk. And of course, interest rate risk is the idea that there is risk associated with the potential for interest to change based upon various factors in the economy. And so interest rate risk is associated most closely with fixed income type accounts or fixed income type investments where there is very little upside potential, but it keeps track with some smaller gains that often is associated with an interest rate or interest bearing account. And so there are short-term and long-term interest rate trends that are changed over time, and these will affect the investment if the investment is, of course, related in one way or another to these interest rate changes. So what I want to do now, after we have kind of summarized those various risks, is look at them in relationship to some common asset classes or some common asset some common asset performing groups and accounts or funds, that kind of thing, and how they relate to them. So first of all is fixed annuities. Now, fixed annuities are a retirement program by a life insurance company. And again, I want to say I'm not advocating any one particular investment strategy here. I'm not talking about what is most suitable for you. That's something I would need to speak with you about personally. But as a general rule, these are principles regarding the relationship of risk and reward when it comes to investments. And so a fixed annuity is an insurance product that is based upon a fixed percentage of interest on that account on an annual basis or upon a monthly basis. And so, as you might imagine, it has a very, very low relationship to a systematic market risk. In other words, if the market goes up or the market goes down, this type of investment is not going to do either one or the other. There is very low volatility when it comes to the market. But does that mean that there is no risk at all? Well, certainly not. In fact, there is a great deal of risk when it comes to interest rate risk, because if this fixed account is based upon a certain interest rate that now changes and maybe it goes up or maybe it goes down, that will affect the way in which this interest is paid out and the way in which the maturity of this annuity is brought to bear. And then, when it comes to inflation risk, it's high. Of course, with credit and business risk, a fixed annuity is quite low. Regulatory risk, it's usually quite low as well because it's not based upon particular companies that might be affected more by that regulatory risk. Indexed annuities are very similar, although they have a little bit different way in which they calculate the returns on it because they are involving themselves to some extent in the market, so that they have some gains in the market, but does not have the losses. And so, as you might imagine, it does have some exposure to the systematic market risk, although that systematic market risk is only with the extent of the gains and not with the losses, because they cannot lose money as an indexed annuity. And then, of course, with inflationary risk, it's medium. With credit and business risk, it's very, very low. And it's very low on regulatory risk as well. And then when it comes to interest rate risk, it's also somewhere in between. Now, bonds are another category that a lot of people have flocked to, especially during times of uncertainty, because they think that it is less volatile and maybe a better, safer return for their assets. And so, again, with bonds, they're pretty much in the middle. They have some systematic or market risk, because usually as the market is going up, people are exiting bonds, and when the market comes down, people are going to buy bonds. And so there is some kind of an inverse relationship to the market risk when it comes to that. And then inflationary risk, of course, as the value of the dollar decreases, the interest rates typically will go up because borrowing needs to be increased in order to maintain these various things. And yet, that's not what we're experiencing because of the influx of the monetary policies of the Federal Reserve have provided for ample supply of money. And so the inflationary risk has been a real fact for bonds. Credit or business risk is minimal when it comes to bonds because bonds are the first to be paid in the event of a bankruptcy, and unlike stocks that are the last to get paid. And the regulatory risks can be high on bonds because there is a great deal of relationship between it, of course, and interest rates and the way and what they decide to do with those things. Mutual funds are diverse in the sense that they often invest in various classes themselves. They may be a small cap, a large cap, medium cap mutual fund. They may also involve themselves in bonds. They may be a mix of those things. And so it's hard to give any specific or definite understanding under mutual funds. And yet, most typically, people think of a mutual fund as following the market. And so there's certain indexes, maybe the S&P 500 index that has, you know, multiple various stocks within it that they are purchasing. And so it does have some exposure to systematic or market risk. Now, the inflationary risk is typically low over time because this type of investment usually outperforms that of a fixed account that is based upon the inflationary rate of the reported rate by the government. The credit and business risk is usually low because of the diversification within a mutual fund. It might have 50 to 100 different companies in there, and so if one company goes bad, it still has the 99 or so other that are in it. It may drop a little bit, but overall it's going to be pretty sound. So the credit or business risk is low when it comes to mutual funds. The regulatory risk can sometimes be, we don't know. It sometimes can be high, sometimes it can be low. And the interest rate risk, of course, as I mentioned earlier, is fairly low unless it is a bond type mutual fund. And then there are stocks. And stocks, of course, have the highest chance of volatility and market risk because they are the market. When you're purchasing a stock, you're purchasing a portion of that company, and that company then is competing in the open market to earn a profit. And so stocks are highly correlating to the systematic and market risks. But on the other hand, they are very, very low correlating when it comes to interest rate risk because most companies really have so much coming in from various funds and investments of that type by shareholders that the interest is very, very, the chance of being involved in interest is very minimal. Regulatory risk is high, obviously, as a company could encounter some new regulatory risk that causes them or makes it more prohibitive for them to be able to bring money out to the shareholders and participate in good returns. Credit and business risk, we said, is high. Inflationary risk typically, again, is low. And then, you know, there is asset class such as, commodities or gold. And as I had mentioned in an earlier episode, gold is money. It's not an investment, but it is gold. And so I have included it here, even though in an earlier podcast I mentioned that it's not really an investment. It's more a hedge against inflation. So as you might imagine, with gold, the inflationary risk is minimal because it actually is a hedge against inflation. Typically, it keeps pace with inflation. It does have some volatility to market risk, but it's usually adverse to it. So if the market is going up in stocks or mutual funds, that kind of thing, then it is probably going down in relative to gold. And, you know, you could go through, I'm going to actually put into the show notes a chart that I have created that shows the relationship between the various risks and the various products that are typically consumed or used by the most people who are considering this kind of investment. And so Then we also have real estate. Now, real estate, of course, is an asset class. It is an investment class. You can invest directly in real estate by purchasing property, or you can invest in real estate through real estate trusts and various other kinds of EFTs and things like that. But the bottom line is that real estate also has some exposure to these kinds of things. For example, interest rate risk is a problem with real estate because most people do not pay cash for their house. And so if interest rates go up, it's going to be harder for a house to be sold at a certain price range if it wasn't being sold already because of the difficulties of that. And then also with real estate, you have some market risk if there's an inflationary bubble with the money supply, so that more money is acquired by people, it's easier for them to purchase. And so this then comes to the whole concept of interest rate risk again, because if interest rates go up, then it also means less people, or more people, have less money to purchase their real estate. And so you can see how all of these various asset classes have one type of risk or another, and sometimes they have more than one, and sometimes they are intermixed, and sometimes they are not. But they all have some kind of risk associated with them. So I want to kind of close by just saying it's important to know the risk that you're taking with your investment. And one risk is not necessarily better than another risk. It's not necessarily better to take a interest rate risky move by committing your money to a fixed type account for a long period of time when you could have gotten far better returns in a more risk associated with the market environment. And so these things need to be weighed out, and you need to be able to understand the differences between them and weigh them. So anyway, I hope that that is able to help you gain a better understanding of the risk that you might take by investing your money in various asset classes and by various means. And that then will be able to give you more money as a family, so that you can then use that wisely for passing on a legacy to the next generation. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?